You may have seen those videos of robots that walk on two legs or the androids who look just a little too human for comfort. But as the gap between man and machine closes, some researchers are developing small, industrious robots based on small, industrious animals, the termites. Why termites? Well, a termite colony can build a mound up to 3 stories tall and do it all without a blueprint. Now scientists have used termite-inspired robots to build 3D structures like pyramids and castles, all without any instructions. They reported their findings recently in the journal Science. Here to tell us what makes termites such a great model for a construction team is one of the authors on that paper, Justin Werfel, research scientist at the Wyss Institute for Biologically Inspired Engineering. Also with us is Scott Turner, professor of biology in the College of Environmental Science and Forestry, State University of New York in Syracuse. And if you want to see these incredible robots at work, go to our website at sciencefriday.com. Welcome to the program, gentlemen.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Scott, let's talk about termites first. Why are termites so cool? I mean, what's so special about them?
Well, I can tell you what interests me about them. The structures that they build are quite remarkable in design and function. The behaviors and the connection between behaviors and the actual structures that they build is an unknown story, and it's a fascinating and complicated story. And it just keeps drawing me in deeper and deeper. It has implications for ecology, for engineering, for our understanding of how brains work, our understanding of how social systems work. And so that, in a nutshell, is what's really great about termites.
Oh, and the colony itself, the structures we see above ground, how do they get there? What are they for?
The termite mounds in the area where I work in northern Namibia, they typically are about 2 to 3 meters tall. And what they do for the colony, which is actually located underground, the termites don't actually live in these mounds. The termites build these mounds to capture wind energy to help power ventilation of their colonies. And if you think about the amount of respiration that has to go on in a colony, it's actually quite substantial. You know, you have anywhere from 1 to 2 million termites living in there, and each of those consume oxygen just like we do. And then the termites cultivate a large colony of fungus, which also consume oxygen. And so if you add up the amount of oxygen that the colony as a whole consumes, it's roughly equivalent to the oxygen consumption rate of, say, a large mammal, anywhere from the size of a goat up to about the size of a cow. And so, you know, you can imagine the problem. If you took a goat or a cow and buried them 2 meters underground, they wouldn't do very well unless you had some means of actually ventilating the space where they live. And that's what the termites do. They build this structure to capture wind energy, and the wind energy helps power gas exchange in much the same way that our lungs actually provide respiratory gas exchange for our own bodies.
Now, termites are blind, right? So how do they coordinate what they're doing, building these things?
Well, that's the $64,000 question, isn't it? We know that they do a number of things. They have a very rich chemical language. They secrete chemical pheromones from their mouth and from their rear ends. They coat their bodies with various kinds of waxes that give them a distinctive odor for the colony. But they actually have a fairly rich cognitive picture of the world around them. They will pay attention to the chemical cues that other termites lay down, but they'll also pay attention to things like how moist the soil is, and if it's too moist, they'll move soil around. They pay attention to the curvature of the surfaces that they're walking on. They'll also pay very close attention to what wind does to the local environment that they are experiencing. And this is crucial to their ability to build a mound that functions well. You know, they basically pay attention to all these cues, and they just keep working at it and working at it until they finally get it right. And it's quite a remarkable process. You know, each termite will pick up a grain of soil, will move it around a little bit and lay it down, and that's what they do. And that's a very simple behavior. But when you combine it with, 100,000 or so other nestmates doing the same thing, their ability to move soil and shape soil into functional structures is very, very impressive.
And Justin Werfel, your robots basically do the same thing, don't they? They pick up blocks, move them around, and build structures just like the termites do.
the details of what the termites do are not the same as the details of what the robots do. The way in which they act is very much the same. So both the termites and the robots are independently controlled. Each one is acting on its own. It has its own brain. It's not getting assigned particular tasks or instructions from the queen. Each one is limited only to its own local sensing. It only knows what's going on right around itself. It doesn't know what the others are doing. It doesn't know what the overall current state of the structure looks like.
So how does it know what to do?
There's two kinds of rules that the robots are following. One corresponds to a set of traffic laws, and that governs the way that the robots are allowed to move through the workspace. And then there's a fixed set of rules that they follow no matter what they're trying to build. And that includes this set of local safety checks that they follow, where they look at a local configuration of building material and use that to decide whether it's safe to put down more material. And as long as they ensure that those conditions are satisfied, they'll always be able to keep building. They're never going to build a situation that they can't deal with, like a lack of a staircase, a cliff that they can't get down from. One of the key tools that they use to help coordinate what they're doing is this idea that really was drawn directly from termites. The term used is stigmergy. It refers to storing information in the environment. So this is what Scott was talking about, where one termite will put some material down, and another one may come along later and respond to the presence of that material and use that to help it decide whether or not to put more material down in the same place. And our robots do the same thing.
So if I wanted to trick the robots and take some of that material away, would they know it's missing and put it back down again?
There are ways that you could take away bricks that could cause problems for the robots. There are ways that it could prevent them from being able to finish the structure. For instance, if you take away a staircase they're using to get off the structure, they could get trapped.
Oh. And they build their own staircase knowing they have to get up and down?
That's right.
They know from their rules and instructions, I have to build something so high, and to build it that high, I have to build a staircase to get up there.
They're not exactly thinking of it in terms of, I need to build a staircase. They're thinking at a much lower level. They're looking at the local configuration of bricks, making sure that certain conditions about local configurations of bricks are satisfied when they add more bricks. And the result of following those rules is that things like these staircases always get built.
Mm-hmm. Scott, how does a termite know what to build? Who decides? If we know what the robots are getting a set of instructions or rules, how does a termite know?
When termites build things, they also follow rules, but they follow rules selectively. So, for example, if you look at a termite swarm starting to build something, you'll often find that most of the termites basically sit around doing nothing, but there's often one or two individuals in a swarm of, say, 25 or 50 that act as the leaders and the initiators of behavior, and they all go around and they all start laying down little markers, and if they need to, they'll physically plow through gangs of termites, termite workers that are just sitting there, and get them motivated. And so when you look at what's happening in actual termite swarms, it's not so much a bunch of robots following the same rules. It's actually a number of biological individuals that have, dare I say it, for something like termite personalities that influence their individual behaviors, but also through interactions with their nest mates, the behaviors of the entire swarms. And this is one of the reasons why I said that these termites inhabit a very rich cognitive world. So the work with the robots it's a major advance because it's captured some of that autonomy that exists in termite swarms. But of course, there's an awful long way to go before I think we'll be able to use robots to build structures with the sophistication that termites actually do.
Do the robots act like swarms too? Do they get in the way of each other? Do they trample one another? Do they plow through like the termites do?
The robots are aware of each other's presence to the extent that they can tell when there's another robot nearby. But the extent of how they interact with each other directly is waiting for the one in front of them who has right of way to proceed first before they move on.
On the video that we have on our website, the robots, they're small, right? 8 inches long. They have cute little wheels that they roll around on. And then they have a way of lifting up these blocks, and they can pile things up one on top of the other. What would be a perfect thing if you scale these up and you have them do real work for people outside of your lab? What would be the perfect kind of job they could do for you?
One of the directions we're thinking that robots like these might be useful in the medium term rather than very long term, so still probably years away, but at least maybe not decades, is to be building levees for flood protection out of sandbags. So that's a classic kind of situation where you want to use robots. It's dirty and it's dangerous and it's dull.
3Ds.
That's the kind. That is the classic 3Ds of robotics: dirty, dangerous, and dull. That's when you want to use a robot rather than a human.
Right.
Building flood protection out of sandbags is exactly that sort of situation. Right now, it's the kind of thing where we send in the National Guard. So if you could have teams of robots like these perform that kind of work, that would let us keep the people out of harm's way. And of course, it's not going to be these robots that we demonstrated in the laboratory. It's not going to be these exact algorithms. But you can imagine how systems very much like those could be adapted to building walls out of sandbags in that kind of environment.
How complex can they build something? Now, can a robot build something with like a Lego sort of thing?
There are two kinds of restrictions on the things that these robots can build with these bricks. You could sort of think of these as physical and logical restrictions. The physical restrictions are that every brick is supported directly by other bricks. Mm-hmm. Every brick is resting on a stack of others all the way to the ground, which means that you can't, for instance, cantilever a series of bricks out over an empty space to build a roof over an enclosed room. So extending this kind of system to handle building with different shapes of bricks, for instance, either to build with something like beams and pillars, or to build with bricks that are put down the way the current ones are and then unfold into different shapes to cover an enclosed area. That's a direction that we've thought about going and that mm-hmm. people doing related work have looked into theoretically.
But not to blow the horn of termites, you know, one of the things that termites do is that they actually do routinely build cantilevered and roof structures, and it's quite fascinating to watch them do it. It's a very dynamic process. They will come in and they'll lay down very moist and pliable bits of sand and that's reinforced with clay, and they'll build these things up until they literally start to fall over. And there are so many of these things going on simultaneously that the chance that one falling pillar will sort of butt up against another is quite high. And so you do get cantilevered structures starting to be built amongst these creatures. And from there, it's a fairly short step to actually building roofed structures.
Yeah. This is Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International. Now, theoretically, could you send these robots, let's say, to Mars in advance to build a shelter? They work by themselves. They've got their instructions. I guess they would need the bricks to build it by themselves until somebody gets there.
That's exactly the long-term vision. For systems like these, it's a situation where it's very dangerous and expensive to send people to do that kind of work. So it's natural for robots. If you could send a swarm of robots on to that dangerous kind of environment, they could do the building in advance of the human astronauts to arrive later. Again, because of the robustness of the swarm approach, if some of the robots fail midway through, that doesn't need to impede the success of the overall project. Because of the expense of sending material from one planet to another, ideally you wouldn't be sending bricks with them. You'd be sending a system that could construct its own bricks out of the regolith that they found on Mars.
And do they know how to do that now?
Not right now. Right now, we give them carefully constructed bricks to work with.
And so you see more sophisticated robots down the line that might do this and other tasks like the termites might be doing.
Any robots you send to Mars are going to have to be significantly more sophisticated and capable. Mm-hmm. What we've demonstrated is a laboratory system that shows the feasibility of having robots do all the things that we're saying we require them to do independently and with onboard sensing. Mm-hmm. Extending that to a system that works in the unpredictable and messy and variable real world is going to require a great deal of additional work.
You know, I don't have to tell you that robots build cars on assembly lines. They do welding, they do lifting, turning, whatever. Could you not meld your robots together with the robots on an assembly line so they could actually build, weld, create, bolt together steel structures out in the field?
One of the things that's so hard about field robotics is that the field is so uncontrolled and unpredictable. Factory robots operate in an environment that's so regular and predictable and controlled that they don't even need feedback. They just keep repeating the same motion over and over again and count on everything being precisely in the right place at the right time. In the real world, everything can change. And in a multi-robot system like this, where they're independently controlled rather than centrally controlled, you don't know in advance maybe how many robots you have. You don't know what order they're going to do things in. You don't know what actions are going to be performed when and in what order. There's all that variability that the robots are going to need to be able to cope with, and so they rely on their own sensing and their ability to react to different situations.
Mm-hmm. And Justin actually hit the nail right on the head there when he mentioned feedback. You know, if you look at the way termites are actually building and maintaining their mound, they're the ultimate tinkerers. They're always moving little grains of soil around, laying new grains of soil down here and so forth. And this confers upon them a tremendous amount of adaptability. And that kind of adaptability is what's going to be needed to be able to get robots to actually do interesting things in the field. And being able to sense the environment, being able to actually make sense out of the environment, if not individually, but at the level of the swarm, it's going to be absolutely crucial to having robots do these kinds of things.
Well, termites certainly are among the most fascinating and prodigious creatures on Earth. Gentlemen, thank you all for taking time to be with us today. Fascinating discussion. Justin Werfel is a research scientist at the Wyss Institute for Biologically Inspired Engineering at Harvard. Scott Turner is a professor of biology in the College of Environmental Science and Forestry at SUNY in Syracuse. Thank you, gentlemen, for being with us today.
Thank you.
It was my pleasure.
You're welcome. And if you want to see those robots working, they are really, really fascinating. Go over to our website at sciencefriday.com/robots and see them working right there.